Psalm 3, let us hear God's word. A psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Selah. I laid me down and slept. I waked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah. Thus ends the reading of God's holy and inspired word. Now this Lord's Day morning, we come again to our monthly prayer meeting, and we've begun this year to do an overview of each psalm, starting in Psalm 1, obviously, as fuel for our time of prayer. Now here, we come to Psalm 3, and we find that this psalm is a prayer. There are different types of psalms, and clearly this psalm is a prayer. It's a psalm of prayer, and it's a psalm of prayer when the psalmist is in affliction. I think we see here David looking upward in verses 1 through 3, David looking backward in verses 4 through 5, and then David looking forward in verses 6 through 8. Charles Spurgeon, in his commentary on this verse, mentions the fact that it's very important in understanding any of the psalms to understand the different scenes that are set in a psalm. Quite often, it's not one perspective that's presented in the psalm. Quite often, there are several perspectives. Sometimes it's the psalmist speaking to God, the psalmist asserting things to himself or to the people of God. Sometimes it's actually God speaking. And so it's important to understand those and to properly understand the different settings. What I see here is that God has given this psalm with David looking in three directions, and yet we find that there is a chronological progression in this psalm, in thought and in action. Spurgeon called this a morning psalm, and I think that's an accurate psalm. It's a psalm that David obviously thought of in the morning after he had found provision of God and strength in God as he laid him down to sleep as he was leaving Jerusalem because of his son Absalom's rebellion. We learn something about the setting in the title, A Psalm of David When He Fled from Absalom, His Son. The setting is found for us in 2 Samuel chapter 15. I encourage you to consider reading that this Lord's Day afternoon to see the setting of this psalm. In 2 Samuel 12:11, God tells David that he will bring a sword to his family. So he tells David that this is going to come upon you for the chastening for his sin regarding Bathsheba and Uriah. So this shouldn't have surprised David. This was a chastening of his sin that God had predicted. We also see in 2 Samuel 15 verses 12 and 13 that not only does his son Absalom rebel against him and seek to take authority from him, but we find that Ahithophel, one of his trusted counselors, also forsakes him. And in verse 12b, we read this regarding this conspiracy. The conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. This had gone on a long period where Absalom had swayed the people's allegiance, and when he finally had it, he takes it from David, and David here is forced to cross the Kidron, the Brook of Kidron, and climb the Mount of Olives in humility. And let me just read verse 30 of 2 Samuel 15 to get a picture of the humility that David was experiencing at this point, the humiliation. 2 Samuel 15, verse 30. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet, and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, He went barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went. Clearly David was humbled by the chastening hand of God. And in that situation, he obviously prayed this psalm and then wrote this psalm for our edification. We see him looking upward first in verses 1 through 3. He begins, Lord. He addresses his God. He goes instinctively to his God when he finds himself in trouble. That's something that we don't always do, do we? But he does. He speaks first in verse 1 about the multitude of his enemies. How are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. He has an accurate perspective. Sometimes we think we have many enemies and we only have a few. But David, under inspiration, says his enemies are many. He's accurate. He's accurately assessing the situation. They're many. He also says something about their words. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. Selah. What could disturb a man of God more than finding out that the people of God, doubted whether God would deliver him or help him? So obviously, it greatly disturbed him. It says, there is no help for him in God, and help there could be translated salvation or deliverance. His enemies don't think he's going to get out of this one, is what he said. His enemies are certain that he's caught, that his God will not deliver him. If you remember this event in 2 Samuel 16, as he continues his journey, Shimei, one of Saul's relations, would have been in that same tribe, curses David. Do you remember David's entourage, one of David's entourage says, well, why don't we just take him out? And David says, no, the Lord's allowed him to curse me. Maybe the Lord will turn his curses against him, but God's ordained this. This is for my good. I'm not going to react against him. This is part of the chastening hand of God upon me. Whether this man's valid in it or not was another issue for David. But David didn't think he had a right to retaliate and seek vengeance himself against Shimei. Then we have at the end of verse 2 this word Selah. The first time we find it in the Psalter. It's common. It's used over 70 times in the Psalter. And there is some question about what it means. I think there are at least two meanings that are likely, and I don't think that they conflict. One is that it is musically a pause, that it has something to do regarding the actual singing of it. But it also seems to suggest a pause for meditation, a pause to take a break and think about what's been said. And there's also the thought that it might also include a lifting up of the voice. It's telling us to pause, but it's also saying something about how we're to sing the next section. We're to pause and contemplate what we've just sung and read and prayed, and then we're to lift up our voice in the next stanzas as we sing. And clearly that would make sense in verse 3, because then David moves, but thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of my head. He's spoken about the words of his enemies. Now he gives us his words. You see the contrast, but thou. I think clearly he had the same perspective that Paul had when Paul could say, if God be for us, who can be against us? Yes, David accurately assesses who's against him, but he says, but thou, O Lord, in spite of all that they're doing, all they're saying, and how many there are, you're my shield, you're my glory, you're the lifter up of my head, you're my security. Literally, that word shield means buckler, so it's suggesting a complete protection. God's his complete protector. He's his glory or his honor. All of David's dignity comes from his relation with God. He's also David's lifter up. He lifts his head up. He delivers him. And he, obviously they are saying that he's expecting to be joyful in this eminent deliverance that God has for him. So in spite of his enemies, David is confident in his God. So we see David looking upward. Then in verses 4 and 5, we see him looking backward. But I think we have a transition in verse 3. And what I think David is getting at, this is all that's against me, but I have a God who is, and who is the rewarder of those that diligently seek Him. Therefore, I'm a man that does diligently seek this God. This is who God is to me, and so now the implication is I'm going to pray. And so we see David here in verses 4 and 5 looking at these things in the past tense. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and He heard me out of His holy hill. Selah, I laid me down and slept. I awake, for the Lord sustained me. There are some commentators that suggest what David is doing here is returning to past times where God had delivered him to encourage him in the present. That very well may be, but clearly the implication is when David found himself in these troubles as he's journeying, he took time to pray to his God to ask for new deliverance. And he actually must have laid down and got a good night's sleep in the midst of the fact that he was on the run because his rebellious son had a price on his head. It says he cried. His troubles brought him to his knees, and he was sincere and affected about his condition. He was courageous, but he was a man that could cry unto God in these circumstances. He cried with his voice. And I think that says something to us about the advantage of verbalizing our prayers to God. I think you'll find that if you pray verbally, vocally, your focus, your attention will stay tighter and you'll be able to continue to focus upon your prayers. But I've found at least that when I'm praying mentally, it's easier to drift into thinking other thoughts. David prayed vocally. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes it would be inappropriate to lift up a prayer vocally. But I think when we can, we ought to. God ought to hear our voice, not just our thoughts. And he says, he heard me. He says, God did hear me, and he heard me out of his holy hill. This does not seem to be a reference particularly to God's presence in the high and holy place in heaven. It's speaking about his presence amongst God's people in his specially designated city and in his specially designated place of worship. So what David is saying is, though even though you've driven me from being able to participate in public worship as I had in the temple, still, it's you, the God that uniquely meets with his people in corporate worship, it's you that heard my prayer, even though I was destitute at this point of it. He says he prayed, then in verse 5 it says he slept. I laid me down and slept, and I awake. David speaks of this instance in the past tense, but he's saying it's taken place, I did it, and this is what happened. God, it says in Psalm 127:2, gives his beloved sleep. He ordinarily gives us that mercy of allowing us to sleep in the midst of many difficulties. And here there was an extraordinary mercy that he gave to David in a very unique situation. And David explains why he was able to sleep. For the Lord sustained me. He doesn't pat himself on the back, say he was able to block out all the negative thoughts and think positively. It wasn't this power of positive thinking. It was the Lord that sustained him. So we see him looking backward in verses 4 and 5. Then we see him looking forward in verses 6 through 8. In verse 6 we have David's confidence. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Spurgeon suggests the picture of David here rising in the morning, buckling on his harness and all his military garb, and singing this psalm. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. He was discouraged on his march. They stopped. He slept. He prayed. God heard him. He got a good night's sleep. He arises, and now he's confident. It says in 2 Samuel 15:25 and 26, it suggests there that David had some question about the outcome. It says in verse 25, he told the men, "If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord." In other words, at that point, as he's leaving, he has some question about whether he's going to get the throne back. But now the next morning, it doesn't appear that he's doubting any longer. And here's a man who's being chastened for serious sin, and yet he believes himself to still be God's man. And so he's confident. And he's going to go into the battle confident. And yet, his confidence isn't in himself, because we have his prayer in verse 7. "Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly." He's saying, "I'm going with boldness and confidence, but all you have to do is arise, O Lord, and you'll save me. I'm not going into this battle confident in my own strength or in the strength of the army that I have. I'm going confident in your strength. If you'll just arise, the victory is yours and thus ours." Have you ever considered what David's saying? He says that God has smitten his enemies upon the cheekbone. "Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly." He says, "I'm going into battle and my enemies don't have any teeth in their mouth." He's saying, "You've already done the work, because they're not going to be able to harm me. They're not going to be able to chew me up. They're just going to be able to gum me, because they have no teeth. They can't harm me. And you've made it so." And then we have in verse 8 the conclusion, David's conclusion. And quite often, the Psalms conclude with a more general teaching that's not specific to the psalmist himself, but it's more generic and helps us to see how this applies to each and every one of us as God's people. He then says, "Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon," he doesn't say me, he says, "thy people." Selah. So he now genericizes it for us. His faith has become triumphant. He says, "Salvation," or deliverance, "belongs to the Lord." Calvin paraphrases it and says, "Deliverance is only in the hands of God." It's the only place deliverance for God's people can be found is in God. But then he gives us a companion statement. "Thy blessing," or "thy benediction, is upon thy people." You deliver your people because you look favorably upon your people. And then he closes with the words again, Selah, pause, to meditate upon this statement. God delivers his people. God looks favorably upon his people in Christ Jesus. So we have to ask ourselves, in conclusion, what do we do when our enemies appear to be getting the best of us? When they're increasing in number, when their words are becoming more and more malicious? Do we attack? Do we seek diversions? Or do we seek God? Do we seek to drown our sorrows in the diversions of the world? Do we attack, or do we go to God? We have to ask ourselves that question. How do you sleep after receiving bad news? We see how David slept when he recognizes the chastening hand of God upon him for the sin that at that point grieved his soul very deeply about his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. He committed adultery. He had committed murder. Yes, he was forgiven. But don't think that those things didn't continue to grieve his soul to the day he died. He had that grief. He had the grief of a rebellious son. Some of you have experienced the grief of having a child rebel against the Lord. Have you ever had one seeking your life? He had that sorrow. He had the sorrow of the fact that he'd lost the kingdom. He was no longer in control in the palace in the capital city. And he's being hunted down by his own son. His own beloved son. And yet he got a good night's sleep. And he did so not in his own strength. He did so because he trusted in the Lord. Think of Psalm 91:1. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the High, of the Most High, shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. How's your abiding under the shadow of the Almighty? Are you experiencing tranquility because you recognize that you're under God's wings? David clearly in this psalm understood that he was there, that he was being protected. But you see what Psalm 91:1 is saying? He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. What he's saying is those that experience that security and tranquility in the midst of suffering and of enemies, it's those people that are the kind that love to meet with God in communion. They're those that dwell in the secret place with God Most High. They're the ones that experience the tranquility and peace that comes when they recognize that they're under God's wings. They're under His care. They're under His shadow. Think of God's promise to Abram in Genesis 15:1. And certainly in Abram, as a representative, it's made to us. He said to Abram, "Fear not, Abram. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." We shouldn't look for protection. We shouldn't look for any reward, anything outside of God. He is everything for us. He's our reward. He's our glory. He's our protector. He's our joy. He's our deliverer. He's our all in all. He was to David and He ought to be to us. Thank you.